reading of the House Transportation Finance and Policy Division to order. This is Frank Hornstein, the chair. Before we get started, I just wanted to not only welcome everybody, but to just go over a few of the protocols. This is our first virtual meeting that we've had this year. People can speak slowly and deliberately so that everyone can be understood clearly. Members and presenters will be muted by default except during the roll call vote. As we went over in our trainings, not be muted, you would have to press the star function on your phone twice to unmute yourself. And we will, the staff will re-engage the mute after we're done with the House Public Information recommends that members not try to watch online or interact with the meeting because there's online on your computers because there's a 27-second lag. If members have questions or would like to be recognized, please contact John Howe, the committee administrator. He will notify me so that you can be called on to speak. And so our first item on the agenda is our call to order. And we will, by necessity, need to take the roll of those that are present, those committee members that are present. And following that, I would like the staff members also to introduce themselves. With that, the roll will be called. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Vice Chair Tabke.
Here.
Representative Torkelson.
Here.
Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Hausman.
Present.
Representative Heinrich.
Present.
Representative Cagle.
Here.
Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick present.
Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative Nelson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Present.
Representative Petersburg.
Here.
Representative Richardson. Representative Runbeck.
Here.
Representative West. Representative West.
Here. West here.
Representative Walgamott. Representative Walgamott. Representative Joachim.
Present.
A quorum is present.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dodge. I will take to heart what Representative Petersburg said for the next item in order to move things along. It is a non-controversial motion, so we will voice vote. The next item is approval of the motion. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Being recorded.
I move the March 12th minutes as presented to us.
Is there any discussion of the March 12th minutes? Again, members, this will be our only voice vote. From now on, we'll be taking roll calls, but for the non-controversial motion of the minutes, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? The motion prevails. Members,
you have been muted. To unmute yourself, press the star key twice.
To take up the one bill that we have on the agenda, which is House File 1447. This relates to transportation issues that are a part of the state's COVID-19 response. This was previously introduced last year. It is a vehicle to carry and delete all amendments, which Representative Tabke will. So, Representative Tabke, would you like to move the amendment to put the bill in its proper form?
Please repeat what you just said.
A motion for the DE6 amendment from Representative Tabke is in order.
Got it. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. This is Representative Tabke. I make a motion to DE6 amendment for the bill and refer it to Ways and Means.
Okay. Representative Tabke moves the DE6 amendment with a referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Members, this is a procedural vote, and we will take the roll. It's simply a vote to move the DE6 amendment to get the bill in the way the author would like it considered. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Vice Chair Tabke?
Aye.
Mute off.
Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Representative Cagle?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Nelson? Representative O'Driscoll?
Aye.
Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Runbeck?
Aye.
Representative West?
Aye.
Representative Walgamott? Representative Walgamott? Representative Joachim?
Aye.
There are 16 ayes and 0 nays.
Okay, thank you very much. There being 16 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails, and the DE6 amendment is before us. Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. There are also a couple of technical amendments that we need to make to the DE6. Appreciate doing those now as well.
Yes, Representative Tabke, we can take those perhaps together. Mr. Burris, could Representative Tabke just present both amendments, and then we can consider those on one vote?
Mr. Chair and members, Matt Burris with House Research, there's one amendment that has two technical changes. It is the H-1447A4 amendment, and it fixes two cross-reference issues that were identified recently. One is to a statute, the wrong section was being referenced, and the other is to paragraph lettering. would resolve both those.
Okay. I would propose a motion to take both of those amendments as one. And is there discussion to these amendments that appear to be technical in nature?
Mr. Chair, I have
hearing none, Mr. Dodge, we're going to do another roll call for these.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes. Oh, wait, one moment, please. Mm-hmm. Representative Tapke, would you like us to move these amendments?
Yes. So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We will take the roll then.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Vice Chair Tabke?
Aye.
Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Representative Bernardi? Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Executive order.
Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Representative Cagle?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Nelson? Representative O'Driscoll?
Aye.
Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Runbeck?
Aye.
Representative West?
Aye.
Representative Walgamott? Representative Joachim?
Aye.
There are 16 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 16 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is now before us in the shape that the author would like the committee to consider it. Representative Tabke, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So House File 1447 is a continuation of items that the legislature passed back on March 26th and taking care of issues that are COVID-related that need to be taken care of in statute. And so there's a variety of items with regard to CDLs and federal funding and different things like that. But at this time, Mr. Chair, if Mr. Burris could please walk through the bill.
Yes, to the bill, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, so I'll walk through the DE6 amendment. Section 1 deals with out-of-state licenses, and this is a modification to a change that the legislature has previously enacted. It became Chapter 71 just a couple of weeks ago, and this broadens a provision on extending the expiration date for licenses for people who are becoming Minnesota residents but are coming from out of state, so they have an out-of-state license. And this would broaden it to include commercial licenses and work something like a conforming change to a federal waiver that had been provided recently from the U.S. Department of Transportation. So this would modify, make a kind of corresponding modification to state law to provide an extension that aligns with the federal waiver extension period. And then Section 2 is a somewhat similar corresponding to federal changes provision. And this has a similar extension for medical examiner certificates and medical waivers, which are required for various commercial driver's license holders and as well as for holders in some intrastate circumstances. So this extension is similar to the that 2-month extension that's been established in Chapter 71. And then Section 3, Mr. Chair and members, also addresses licensing, and this provides for some modifications to the typical requirements that are in place in state law for issuance of commercial driver's licenses. And this would allow for issuance of a new commercial driver's license if under some changed procedures, but essentially if the Department of Public Safety has set up procedures for the on-the-road portion of the commercial driver licensing process, the department would be able to issue the license without obtaining a in-person photograph or a test of the person's vision. This license would have an expiration that's shorter than the usual expiration period, so it would be 2 months following whichever month the public health emergency ends. But that expiration date would extend back to the usual timeline that would be in place if the license holder comes in and gets the in-person photograph and passes the vision exam. And then Section 4 is the first of a couple of provisions that deal with motor vehicle registration. Section 4 would extend the registration for non-passenger vehicles that aren't able to be registered through the online process. And somewhat similar to other extension provisions, this would be an extension of the registration to the end of the second month following whichever month public health emergency period terminates. An extension under this provision wouldn't modify the regular registration period, so it doesn't push it out. It kind of works like a delayed registration in effect. And then Section 5 also goes to vehicle registration. This addresses quarterly registration scenarios, which is farm trucks and some other types of vehicles that are used in farm-related circumstances. And it would provide for deeming registration for vehicles that are normally registered on a quarterly basis and had been registered in a prior quarter but aren't actually registered in the current quarter, which had started March 1st. So it would provide for a delay and direct any vehicle owners who operate on public roads during the upcoming quarters to perform that registration after the fact. And then, Mr. Chair and members, Sections 6 and 7 have legislative reporting provisions. One is for the Department of Transportation. The other one is for the Metropolitan Council. These are structured similarly and would direct each agency to provide some information on temporary powers exercised during the peacetime public health emergency. Section 8 would extend the due date for a transit finance report that is required of the Metropolitan Council is normally due October 15th of this year. It's a biennial report. And the provision would extend that due date out to February 15, 2021. And then, Mr. Chair and members, the last section goes to use of federal funds under the CARES Act, which was recently enacted and provides federal aid for states and localities. This language identifies some particular purposes such as protective equipment, safety training, and transit vehicle cleaning that would be purposes that transit agencies, both in Greater Minnesota and the Metropolitan Council, would be able to explicitly use the Federal CARES Act funds for. This is a non-exhaustive list, but this would be optional or arguably suggested uses of the funds. And then there's also legislative reporting on use of the federal funds directed both to the council and to MnDOT on how the funds are used. that, Mr. Chair, is a run-through of the sections in the amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Burris. Before we get to testimony, and we'll have testimony from the Department of Public Safety, MnDOT, and the Metropolitan Council on this bill, I would ask if members have questions specifically to Mr. Burris, we can handle those now. I know there are a few members that have already indicated that they would like to make some comments, particularly to the DVS section of this bill, and I will call on you after the DVS testimony. At this point, I would like to ask if there are any questions of Mr. Burris. Okay, I don't have any at this point.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Petersburg.
I just wanted to, I tried typing in quick to John, but I missed that. The question I wanted to just verify, there will be some variations in collections of these funds that are postponed, but because we're in the middle of the biennium, they'll be recouped into next year. So am I correct that biennial-wise, the budget won't be impacted negatively by these changes? Is that correct?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, yes, that's my understanding from the information I've seen so far from the department. Mr. Lee might have some further, but what I have gathered is that it's largely the likely revenue impacts are largely involve a shift from fiscal 20, the current fiscal year, into the next year, the biennium fiscal 2021. It is possible that there could be some other revenue implications around behavioral changes, and I'm not sure that. Because we don't have a fiscal note yet, I'm not sure that all that has been identified or anticipated or assumptions haven't been fully built.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, this is Representative Tapke, if I could add into that as well.
Proceed, Vice Chair Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to add on to that, from everything we've heard, Mr. Burris is absolutely correct, and we think it's about a $10 million shift is what we anticipate in that number from 20 to 21, as well as we have requested a fiscal note for this now that we have a bill that we're working with, and our intent is to have this bill taken up on the 14th when legislature is hopefully back in session, and we will have a fiscal note by that point.
Okay. If there's no further member questions of nonpartisan staff, I'd like to now proceed to testimony. I'd like to start with the Department of Public Safety. We have with us Emma Corey from the Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. She will testify, but I also wanted to let members know we also have Jordan Haldofterhide, the legislative coordinator, and Colonel Matt Langer is, I believe, on the phone as well. So if you have questions for either of them, in addition to Ms. Corey, you can direct them to the appropriate staff person from the Department of Public Safety. With that, I'd like to call on Ms. Corey. Welcome to the committee. And please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm not getting any volume.
I'm not either. I was just going to...
We have a technical difficulty here. If Mr. Howe could maybe direct us to maybe be able to hear the testimony, I'm not able to hear it.
Mr. Chair, members, John Howe, if Ms. Corey can hear us, if you have mute on your phone, on the physical phone, you may have to unmute your phone.
Oh, I am so sorry. So y'all have not heard anything then yet, is it?
Yeah, none of us have heard whatever you were starting with. I apologize.
Oh, I am so sorry, folks. I am getting used to this as well. Thank you, Vice Chair Kapke. Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members. This is Emma Corey, Driver and Vehicle Services Director. I want to first say, as a Minnesotan, I am so very proud of our legislators in the last few weeks and the work that you have done in terms of already passing 4531 that had elements of real ID, driver's license extensions, and things like that that are already serving Minnesotans. The bill that we are talking about today does exactly that and extends that to our vehicles and a lot more. I want to also say that DVS is in business right now. We continue to serve Minnesotans. We are, most of our folks are currently working remotely, and we are continuing to issue titles, continue to issue driver's licenses, continue to operate on our online and mail services. The one thing that we are currently working on, in fact, as we speak, we are looking at alternate ways to be able to provide our road test. That is the one piece that is a piece that we are working on right now, and we should have some responses and ideas on that shortly as well. I want to also add that in this bill, what you see is we are going to be able to conform to what we already have as some federal waivers. When it comes to our federal waivers on medical certificates, we will be able to conform to what the feds have already allowed us and giving us the opportunity to go with that waiver on a state basis up to 2 months post when the emergency ends. We talk about the photo and the vision test. This is primarily going to help our farmers. When it comes to farm CDLs, as of this morning, 9 o'clock, a farm CDL holder from last year can renew online. This, if this bill passes that we are talking about today, it will also allow us to clear the path for new farm CDLs. So hugely important for Minnesotans at this current time. What this bill will also do is, when it comes to vehicles, right now we are able to renew vehicles, passenger vehicles, via online. This particular bill, what it does is it gives all vehicles an extension. And we will be, of course, working with our law enforcement partners so that they are aware of the fact that this bill is allowing us to provide an extension through 2 months post the end of the peacetime emergency for all vehicles, not just passenger vehicles, but all vehicles. Also, it goes into talking about the specifically, Matt brought it out nicely. I want to compliment Matt and Lexi that have been doing great work with our team on, you know, specific kinds of vehicles like farm vehicles that are only being used during this time, as well as construction vehicles and things like that. So I'm happy to answer any specific questions at this time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Corey. I, at this point, would like to call on Representative Torkelson. I know that he has some thoughts about the section of the bill. Representative Torkelson, if you had a question or wanted to make a statement, I would certainly like to have your perspective on the record.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Very good. So my questions are in result to the extension of registration for certain vehicles. With the current announcement that deputy registrars are opening up, many of them have opened already and are available for a variety of services on a non-face-to-face basis, I'm wondering, and I don't really have enough information to have a solid opinion at this point, but I'm wondering if it's really necessary to extend these registrations. I realize the initial idea was that revenue would only be shifted into the next fiscal year, but I believe there's a risk of lost revenue also because of the quarterly nature of these licenses, and we are not in a position right now where we want to give up any revenue with the problems that we know are in our future in regard to the need for revenue given the shape of the economy. I would like the commissioner to comment on this, please.
Ms. Corey.
Thank you, Vice Chair, Chair and members. Thank you for the question, Representative Torkelson. The way I understand this bill, what we are looking at is the current time and the public health emergency that we are in. It allows us to tell Minnesotans you do not need to rush into our offices, whether that is a DVS office, whether it is DR office. What this typically does is it's telling people you have a break, you have some more time, you do not need to rush in. You do not need to rush in all at one time. The revenue issues, I do think that revenues will be deferred. I do not believe revenues will be lost. Yes, given the timing, we are in the middle of the good news is that we are in the first year of a biennium. And so, yes, we might have revenues deferred to the next biennium. However, we are still talking within the same biennium and not going into any issues around, loss of funds across biennium. So hopefully that answers the question. I do want to also say we have been trying to keep in touch with our DRs that I personally see as an extension of my staff. 96 DRs at the current time are providing limited services as of today. And so we cannot thank our partners enough. They represent us in corners of the state that we will never be able to be present as DVS, and they do that for us. At the current time, we also have 5 deputy registrars that are able to provide prorate services. So all of our vehicle owners, from regular citizens to commercial drivers, and trucking companies are being serviced as we speak.
Did you have a thank you very much, Ms. Corey. Did you have a follow-up, Representative Horkelson?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Not really a follow-up, just a further comment. I think we need more information on this. I'm not convinced that there isn't a risk of lost revenue. I won't belabor the point at this time. I will just add that our deputy registrars are certainly hurting. They've had revenue issues going on for some time prior to this crisis, and the current situation is making a bad situation worse. It's something we should all keep in mind. As the assistant commissioner said, these are our partners, but they need to make money to stay in business, or they need to have revenue to stay in business. And we need to be thinking about how we're going to handle that down the road.
Thank you very much, Representative Torkelson, for both your question and your comment. Do members have any I understand Representative Tabke would like to comment on this matter as well.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And just so everyone on the committee knows that we have been working on this bill and getting input from a lot of different folks. And when we put this deputy registrar extension piece in was right when we left this, the tab extension piece in the bill, we had, sorry, my dog went out of the, my office. Hold on. Sorry. But we had put this.
That's on the record, Vice Chair Tapke.
Yep, my dog. That's a classy legislature here. Thank you. They had thought that very few of the deputy registrars would open back up after the governor's order for the ability to do that. But we're hearing today that as many as 50% or more of the deputy registrars are opening back up. So I would be very willing to have further discussions about this this topic and seeing as this moves forward as to what makes the most sense for everyone as regards to tab extension on commercial vehicles.
Okay, there's no additional member questions for DVS. Ms. Corey, thank you, and I want to echo your comments that you made earlier that we have really had always historically a great working relationship with your division, but I think in these particular times it's especially appreciated your work. So our next set of testifiers will be from the Minnesota Department of Transportation. I understand we have Commissioner Margaret Anderson Kelleher with us. Also, Mr. Rudine is with us. I'm not sure who would like to go first. I would assume it would be the commissioner. So welcome to the committee, Commissioner Margaret Anderson Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Can everyone hear the commissioner? Excellent. You can proceed. Welcome.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for holding this meeting and for considering this important legislation. MnDOT really has only a few things that touch in this area today in this bill, so I'm going to take the opportunity to first thank you for the medical waiver for interstate drivers, as well as the language that helps with the Federal CARES Act and transit dollars, since we have our partners in Greater Minnesota who provide transit services and, like you will hear from the Met Council, have had significant impacts because of COVID-19. So I want to thank you for those efforts today. I also will take just a brief opportunity to let you all know that MnDOT is open for business. We have moved over 3,000 MnDOTers to work from home, but we are doing the business of both delivering on this construction season and planning forward, and the other important things that MnDOT does every single day. And so I think it's important to know that as an agency, we are up and running. We have been able to work with our partners in the private sector fairly effectively to continue construction projects throughout the state. And in fact, in some cases, like the Highway 5 airport project, we are able to start early. And one of the other consequences of the lower traffic volumes out there right now are that we are looking at this point to do a little less of that nighttime work that can be so dangerous for workers and be able to move that into the daytime as well as other things like lane closures. I want to hit on a couple issues that aren't in this bill that I know are important to members that we've been able to really, I think, address through both federal guidance and what the state is doing. So first of all of our major rest stops are open for business right now, other than rest stops that already were undergoing some form of construction. And we do have a project coming on the 94 corridor, but right now we are looking to not close the rest stop on that corridor until late April. This is important to the trucking community as there is a lack of food out there and places to rest out there. So we have continued to maintain those. We have not had an issue with keeping them clean. In fact, our partner, our contracted partner, Greenview, is cleaning rest stops, and we have upped that the schedule of cleaning to make sure that we are doing our very best. We have indefinitely postponed opening the 10 seasonal waysides. These locations would have typically opened on April 1st, They have very limited resources at them, no running water, and they're located primarily on our recreational routes, and they cannot accommodate commercial truck parking. So I just wanted to share that. We're working closely with the Minnesota Trucking Association to address any issues that they have with any of our rest stop issues. I also just want to briefly mention that I know there was some talk early on of a blanket lifting of the spring weight restrictions, and that is not in this bill. We want to thank you for that. It's important to know that the governor's executive orders, both 2006 and 2024, are providing relief to weight limits of trucks that are related to both emergency COVID-19 deliveries and a number of other issues. Our local partners are particularly appreciative of not having that provision in this bill. And I just want to mention that we have been for almost 21 years using a scientific method across the state to lift the load restrictions. We usually do not meet that 8-week maximum. In fact, to just give you an example, in the metro region, about 62% of the time, the load restriction is lifted early, and I believe that is going to likely happen again this year. And the lowest percentage for a region of the state is, no surprise, the north region of the state, which is just a little under 20% of the time we are able to lift those load restrictions early. That said, we are also working with contractors and local units of government on a project-by-project basis. If we need to move a piece of construction equipment, trying to make that possible if we can do it safely without causing greater damage to our roadways. Let's see. I think I'll stop there, Mr. Chair. We appreciate all of your work. And, of course, Mr. Radin and I are ready for questions, as well as look forward to your emails if you are having, or phone calls if you're having, specific MnDOT related issues.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, and I will also extend my gratitude for all of your work during this very difficult and challenging time. And I would now defer to the committee if you have any questions of the commissioner. May I do not see any at this point. We will now transition to the Metropolitan Council. The Met Council has a provision in this bill, and I do wanted to acknowledge the language, the permissive language in the bill related to clean and safe buses. Came from Senator Dibble. However, I do want to thank Representative Runbeck, who initially raised some of these questions very early on in the crisis. Representative Runbeck had expressed her concern for particularly the drivers, and so I appreciate that, Representative Runbeck, and I think Senator Dibble and you were tracking on this issue. So that language was inserted as a result of some of the ideas Senator Dibble and Representative Runbeck had shared with us. With that, Mr. Shetman, I believe Mr. Shetman is on the line. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, this is Judd. I hope everybody is doing well and can hear me okay.
For the record, your complete name, Mr. Shetman.
Okay, yep, I just want to make sure you can hear me. My name is Judd Shetman. I'm the Government Affairs Director at the Met Council. So thanks for giving us the opportunity to speak here at your hearing, Mr. Chair members. There is a few provisions in the bill that apply to the Met Council, and I appreciate the opportunity for us to work with you and the members of the Senate to iron this out. And I also want to thank folks at MnDOT as well, as we were shaking out a lot of this stuff over the last few days. I'll speak to one provision in particular, which is the Met Council provision that we asked for, which is in Section 8 of the bill that extends the deadline for the transit finance report. This report is required of us, to, as Mr. Burris mentioned, that we come forward with this report every 2 years and take a look at what transit investment would look like in the metro area and what types of funding do we have available so we can build that into the assumptions of our report. And so we asked for that extension for two purposes. Number one, the folks that we would be working with to build this report, particularly at the local government level, have been asked to work on other things related to this pandemic right now. So we had some concerns about being able to deliver the report on time. But also, we think the post-COVID-19 economy potentially could look a little bit different. So we were asking for a little bit of a grace period in order to turn that in so we'd have some better, so we'd feel a little bit stronger about some of the assumptions that we were putting into that report. So I just want to thank everybody for their assistance in allowing us to seek a little bit more time, not only on behalf of the Met Council, but also for our local government partners. So thank you very much for that. And Mr. Chair, members, I know you mentioned Senator Dibble and Representative Runbeck and their commitment to wanting to make sure that our drivers and riders were safe. I have to make sure that it's clear to everybody that at Met Council, Metro Transit, Metro Mobility, our most simple and straightforward objective during this pandemic is to risk the exposure for our riders and staff and only trying to provide necessary rides for essential trips. And we've made a lot of changes here since the shelter in place. I know all of you received a memo from me almost maybe 10 days ago, a couple weeks ago, related to some of the service changes that we've made. We've suspended the overnight service between 11 p.m. and 4:30 a.m. We've reduced our daily service to more like a Saturday service, so we're providing about 60% of the service that we would have on a normal, prior to the COVID-19 issue. We've reduced our headways on light rail and North Star, and what we found is that we've had a pretty dramatic loss of ridership over that time. Currently, the Blue Line LRT ridership is down 79%, Green Line ridership is down 72%, and our North Star ridership is down over 95% at this point. It's somewhere between 95 and 97%. And currently, our regular up bus is down nearly 70%. But as folks may be aware that we have instituted rear door boarding on buses when available. We are cleaning and disinfecting vehicles as often as possible. We are providing now operators with, we've been providing operators with wipes at the start of their shifts, and we allowed drivers to begin using masks on March 13th, but we are going to be, we're providing masks to our drivers as of today. And so we've also instituted some changes in Metro Mobility where we are only providing one ride per trip, where before we would stack those riders. This is for the safety of our drivers and also for the riders. And so, as I mentioned before, they'd be a shared ride service. And after each trip, the drivers perform cleaning of the vehicle. You've also heard that we've instituted a few other items where we are now providing grocery pickup for our Metro Mobility customers. So they don't have to make a trip. We can get that and deliver those trips or those groceries to those folks, and we are seeing that the requests for that begin to climb here, and we think that is a really good step on our part. The Metro Mobility ridership is down between 75 and 80%, and one other thing I want to make sure everybody understands is that Metro Mobility has suspended all of its new and renewal certifications for customers. So customers who use Metro Mobility conditionally are able just to continue to use that service. So we don't want to leave anybody out hanging because of the certification process. But I don't know if there's any particular questions for me related to this, but that's where we're at.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shetland, for that informative summary. We do have a question from Representative Rundbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Shetland. Wanted to ask about the federal, I guess it's called CARES, COVID funding that is anticipated from for Metro Transit. And, you know, are there restrictions on how that money will be spent? I guess that would be the first question.
Mr.
Chair. Yep, Mr. Chair, Representative Rundbeck. We are still working through that, but I do have some detail here that I shared with Mr. Howe just prior to this meeting that maybe he can send out to folks. But I'll try to do a quick run-through of what the CARES Act looks like. The state of Minnesota is going to receive approximately $308 million from that program. And in the for the Metropolitan Council, that means we're going to be receiving $226 million, which will be broken out to $12 million to our regional providers, our suburban partners, and then $214 million for council services. And those allocations were based on federal funds appropriated back in 2018, 2019, and 2020. And so since it's just formula, that's how those funds were distributed. The funds are going to be able to be used for operating assistance and capital projects like bus replacement. The funds began eligible, their eligibility began on January 20th, and then that moves forward. And to be eligible for reimbursement, those capital or operating expenses must be reviewed. Must be reviewed for compliance with federal requirements. And so there is a lot of detail yet to come on the how the FARES Act is going to work, but one point that I want to make sure folks understand is that this is a reimbursement program. It is not a drawdown where we are not given that money and then we just start drawing from it. We have to apply to the FTA in order to receive reimbursement for those funds. And Representative Rundbeck, to your question as well, in the language that the committee was working on under Section 9, that first section deals with the CARES Act and puts an emphasis on the protection equipment and the safety training for operators and the cleaning of our vehicles. But further down in that section, it includes the reporting that says that the the House and Senate Transportation Committee is going to receive a report from both MnDOT and the Met Council on the expenditures, the purpose of the expenditures of that we are going to be seeking reimbursement from the FTA on. So as we get into this, I can assure you that there will be a full reporting of how those funds are being used, what's eligible, and how we are seeking reimbursement for that. So hopefully that helps, because I will be honest with you, we are on the very beginning edge of trying to understand how all of the federal funds are going to work, but we can say that there's a significant amount of money coming from the federal government to help the transit systems, because we are really taking it on the nose here between the fact that we know that the vehicle sales are falling off dramatically, and we are also not getting any fair revenue in our system. So having the Fed step in and help us with this is really a big deal for us.
Okay, Representative Rubick, do you have any follow-up question or comment? I'll also be calling on Representative Porkel. Representative Rundbeck?
Just a quick one regarding the ridership numbers being down so dramatically. So are we at, have you discussed having operators furloughed? I understand that they, they're still, I guess, coming into work, more or less. That's what I hear anyway. But, how do you handle that since there's not work to do?
Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rundbeck, one of the things that we're doing is we are actually adding some service on routes where we would be carrying more riders than what we would be able to provide good social distancing on. So we are actually able to spread that service out and add additional service so that we will only have maybe 8 or 10 people on a particular bus. at that point in time. And folks have not been furloughed to this point, but as I mentioned, that we have made some changes in our service, and so far, so good as far as us not having to make any changes as far as furloughs.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Shetland. We have a question from Representative Porkelson, and then we'll have one more testifier. We have an additional testifier. One member from the public would like to join us. Representative Porkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, Mr. Shetland, to the hearing. Security on the light rail, apparently, and possibly on all transit, sounds like it's still a problem in spite of lower ridership. Can you comment on that?
Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, our police officers are still out in full force addressing these addressing issues that we're finding on our system, not even necessarily on the light rail platforms, but it is definitely something that is continuing to be a difficult issue for us to address. As folks will obviously recall, we were working with Representative Tabke and others on a bill to allow us to address how we may take a different approach to safety and security on our transit system. But Representative Torkelson, to your specific question, what I will do is follow up with Metro Transit and our Metro Transit police and see if I can find some additional detail that I can circle back with you and the committee on about specific steps that we're taking, at least during the pandemic, because we are continuing to experience those issues, and I'd like to be able to provide you more detail than what I'm able to right now.
Representative Torkelson, any follow-up?
Well, just thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Shetland, for those comments. You know, it's something that I think we need to be aware of. It's not only security, it's also the health of the passengers on these transit vehicles. Thank you for taking part today.
Okay. I have no additional questions for Mr. Shetland. Thank you, Mr. Shetland, also for your partnership and your help in finalizing some of the language of this bill. Very much appreciated your active engagement with this. So we have one member from the public who has signed up to testify. And for those people listening in from the general public, in future meetings, we do welcome testimony as we do at all of our meetings. There is, I believe, a letter in the packet from Ms. Bunyan from the Minnesota Public Transit Association. So we welcome both written comments that will be passed on to members, but for those who want to testify in person, it's the usual procedure where you would simply contact Mr. Howe, and we, because of our current situation, we just do need to cut that off an hour before the beginning of the meeting so that we can properly place you on the agenda. So is Mr. Sam Rockwell from Move Minnesota on the line?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, and you can proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Very good. My name is Sam Rockwell. I'm Executive Director of Move Minnesota, transportation advocacy organization here in Minnesota, working to lead the movement for an equitable transportation system that puts people first. You know, I first want to say thank you to Mr. Shetland and Met Council and MBTA and MnDOT for really looking out for our transit systems and being strategic in allocating the service that is in existence and thinking about the safety of drivers. You know, although ridership's down, I just wanted to touch briefly on who is still on transit. And a study was published a few days ago that revealed that our lowest income neighbors here in the Twin Cities, you know, who are disproportionately people of color, Black, and Indigenous, were delayed in being able to reduce daily travel and are often unable to work at home at all. Many of these community members, from grocery store stockers, delivery drivers, home health aides, you know, they're unable to social distance because the state has classified them as essential workers, and they are continuing to take transit. As Mr. Shetnan pointed out, there are routes where we're actually adding some service to maintain social distancing. Move Minnesota, in partnership with Transit Center, a national research organization, determined that about 40.8% of all transit riders meet our current essential worker definitions. So that's a substantial amount of our most crucial workforce today. So, you know, it's our obligation to support and care for these workers. I think the provisions within this DE amendment are great in allowing flexibility for cleaning and for providing protection for our drivers. And in addition, you know, I just wanted to put before the committee the importance of thinking about when these riders need to travel, that late night service continue in some form or another for essential workers who work odd hours, whether at a 24-hour pharmacy or at a hospital, that our agencies continue to have the resources to run enough buses to diffuse those numbers of riders at any given time. You know, we're lucky to have had the CARES Act passed at the federal level, and I think it's important to keep an eye on how long those funds last. Again, according to a study put out on the HIT to transit agencies nationally, it looks like the $210 million or so coming to Metro Transit could be actually on the low end of what's needed, depending on how long we're asked to remain in a social distancing reality. Having route consolidation is important, but then also thinking about when there are places where there is congestion, which is increasingly less an issue these days, but dedicating transit lanes so that buses can move faster to reduce the amount of time that people have to remain on the vehicles in this time. And finally, you know, although it's difficult to think ahead to our recovery at this time, certainly as we're all in this together right now, I do want to bring the committee's attention to how important it is that the recovery include robust and comprehensive transit service, because this service is going to allow our community members to save the nearly $10,000 a year it costs to own a car and invest that money in our local businesses who are under such extraordinary duress right now. And I do think it's relevant to think about that at this time, because how transit is supported and managed and how we are able to keep a staff ready to deploy quickly and drivers ready to deploy quickly when we are able to is going to determine how well we are able to provide exceptional service that can then allow us to reinvest in our communities. So thanks for all of you for working through all the logistics of having these hearings and for all the work that you've done so far. And thanks for your support for our community and for safe, clean transit service.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Rockwell. And, you know, I think you referenced the report. And if you could send that on to Mr. Howe, we might be able to get that to the committee, or at least have it available for committee members who would like to take a look at it. Appreciate your testifying and for your work. Questions for you, Mr. Rockwell, so thank you. What we'll now do, members, is there was a I hope Mr. Shetnan is still on the line. Mr. Shetnan, are you still with us?
I am.
Okay. We have a question from Representative O'Driscoll. I believe that he has one additional question for you, specifically, Mr. Shetnan. Representative O'Driscoll.
I'm here.
Oh, good. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you. Yes.
I understand you have a question for Mr. Shetnan specifically.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shetnan, you had commented that the ridership on North Star is down by 95%.
Can you give me an idea of what your plans are or what action plans you're considering from the Big Lake to the cities and the St. Cloud link to Big Lake? Would seem that we might want to preserve those assets if we have extremely low ridership instead of spending money on that to reserve some of the monies that you have for those programs. Any thoughts or comments to share with us today?
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Mr. Shetman.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, thank you for the question. When I mentioned that ridership is down that significant, part of that is obviously a huge part of it has to do with the pandemic. And what we did is normally we have 6 a.m. Trips that come into the metro and then 6 trips that go out. And we have cut those to 2 trips both ways on weekdays, and then we also eliminated our weekend service for that. So we have made major reductions in that, which is obviously playing a huge hand in the reduction of the ridership that we're having. But what we want to make sure is that for the essential workers who are needing to get to their work, that who rely on North Star, that they still have an opportunity to be able to use the North Star train in order to get to and from work. So we're trying to balance what other measures we may take in order to reduce potential costs related to North Star during this pandemic, but also balance making sure that those essential workers who rely on that service are able to get to their place of employment. And so I want you to be aware that we are aware of the issue with obviously the incredibly reduced ridership on North Star, and we're trying to figure out what are the right steps to take related to that. And so I will follow up with our folks as well just to make sure that the folks at Metro Transit and the council are aware that this question was raised, and see potentially what other steps that we may be able to take. But I want to assure you that we are looking at all of these issues in whole cloth and trying to figure out how we can strike the right balance. So, but thank you very much for that question, and I'll follow up with our folks and just see if there's anything else being considered at this point.
Thank you. Any further question or comment, Representative O'Driscoll?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a general statement, and I'm sure that Mr. Shetman is considering this because he's looking at it with a North Star. For all Metro Transit assets, to run those, there's a cost and a maintenance, and if we can preserve the life of those assets, that's good for all concerned. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Now, members, I would like just to turn to see if anyone has any questions of Representative Tapke. In specific, questions of the author, and then if anyone would like to make any closing comments, we'll open it up for that as well. So I don't see I'll pause just for a minute here just to see if anyone has questions specifically for Representative Tapke. And then if there are none, then we can get to any closing comments, and, of course, we'll give the author the last word before we vote. Okay, I don't, one sec. Okay, Representative Torkelson and Petersburg, I have you on the list for some closing comments, but before we do that, I'll call in Representative Tapke for his closing statement.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say thank you to everyone. This has been really great process in working with everyone to get this figured out for this bill and what we can include for what the people of Minnesota need for these COVID-related issues. And I want to say specifically thank you to yourself, Mr. Chair, and the Representative Torkelson for all the time we've spent on conference calls getting this figured out, as well as the extraordinary work of Mr. Lee and Mr. Burris in this work. So thank you very much, everyone, for your participation in putting it together for the people of Minnesota.
Thank you. I have on the list Representative Petersburg, Representative Torkelson, I'll make some comments, and then we'll bring this to a vote. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to refer back to what I think Representative Torkelson really referred to, which has to do with during the state forced closure of many businesses, we helped out the employees with unemployment, obviously. But businesses, the best they got was a loan, short-term loans, et cetera, which means they still got to come up with a profit. That includes the deputy registers. And deputy registers are getting hurt even worse in the fact that people can renew their license online and stuff. That one-time funding that they would be spending is now going to the state. That's not going to be able to be recouped at the local deputy registers. And so we need to keep in mind that these local deputy registers are a very important facet of our registration process, and we need to do whatever we can to help them because they can't recover that dollars until next year, and it's only a one-time per car cost. So my comment is just that this bill is important for us to move forward with, absolutely, but we need to also keep in mind the issue and what we forced our deputy registers into. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. And Representative Tapke, why don't we take Representative Torkelson's comment, and I think you may want to I know you might have a response to some of the issues with deputy registrars, so I'll let you have one more crack at it. But Representative Torkelson, I know you wanted to make some final statements.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Representative Tapke for authoring this bill. A lot of hard work has gone into it, both, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for your work. And we've been working with the Senate and with staff such as Mr. Lee and Mr. Burris have been doing yeoman's work in unusual circumstances for all of us. I would just remind everyone that we're still in the circumstance where all four caucuses need to approve of legislation before it reaches the floor. I have not signed off on this yet. I'm really waiting for more information before I do, but we have some time between now and the 14th to iron out those final details. But there's a lot of good stuff in here that will help the citizens of Minnesota. I'm sure we'll be moving forward with most of it, and I look forward to continuing to tune it up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Torkelson. And I know that Representative Tapke would like, I think, to make another just final comment on this issue of the deputy registrars, which I think is kind of one of the points here that that still may need some additional work. Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to make sure that it's crystal clear to everyone based on Representative Petersburg's comments there is that this bill does not affect passenger vehicles whatsoever. All passenger vehicles still must pay and get tabs just the same as they would whether we were in or not in a peacetime emergency. So it is important that everyone in Minnesota understands that this bill does not affect that piece at all. And so all this does is affects the commercial vehicles, which the vast majority of construction vehicles and things like that needed to be renewed the first quarter of 2020. And so that's where many of those happen. So if they didn't happen to get it done except for within those last couple weeks of March, then those are all done and all that work has been completed. And also to be clear that the deputy registrars have been given the go-ahead to open back up for everything except for face-to-face transactions. And so with that, they'll be able to all process these tabs. They'll be able to do everything through Dropbox and through the mail and that type of thing. So those are all still up and running. And I'm not pushing back at all what Representative Petersburg said. I'm just making sure that everyone understands where we're at on the issue of tabs and that they can still go to their local deputy registrar and use the Dropbox function there where I have been told that most of them have them and be able to renew at their local just the same way they always have been, except for it can't be a face-to-face conversation.
Okay, well, with that, I don't have any additional member comments. Let me just make a couple of brief comments before we vote, and that is to echo what Representative Torkelson said, first and foremost, I want to thank the staff who has really worked extra hours in unusual conditions here remotely. We've been able to get the job done with them, you know, exchanging bill drafts back and forth between four different caucuses and the governor's office and the agencies. It takes extraordinary effort and time to do that. So staff on both sides of the aisle, the nonpartisan staff, we deeply appreciate your work. Also the members who have really rolled up their sleeves as well and given both Representative Torkelson and I as your leads, your input, and I think quite a bit of that is reflected in this bill in terms of our priorities. So, again, we are in uncharted territory, unprecedented times. We all know that. And I have really valued, in particular, my partnership with Representative Torkelson. He's been such a great help to us as we navigate this. So I want to thank you, Representative Torkelson, for your active involvement and engagement and help with all of the issues that we have discussed today. And Representative Tabke, you have really been a stellar as well. And I think there is, you know, some additional discussion that has to happen in this bill as it moves forward. And I'm confident that some of the issues that were raised today with the license tabs and the CDL question can be resolved. So with that, I think we are now ready to take the roll on this bill. Representative Tabke, would you like to renew your motion?
I would like to renew my motion to refer House Bill 1447 to, as amended, to Ways and Means.
Okay. With that, Mr. Dodge, please take the roll on the bill as amended.
Chair Hornstein?
Yes.
Vice Chair Tabke?
Yes.
Representative Torkelson?
Yes.
Representative Bernardi? Representative Bernardi?
Mute off.
Representative Bernardi?
Yes.
Representative Elkins?
Yes.
Representative Hausman?
Yes.
Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Representative Cagle?
Yes.
Representative Kosnick?
Yes.
Representative Mason?
Yes.
Representative Nelson? Representative O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Representative Petersburg?
Yes.
Representative Richardson?
Yes.
Representative Runbeck?
Yes.
Representative West?
Yes.
Representative Walgamott?
Yes.
Representative Joachim?
Yes.
There are 17 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 17 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is amended. Is passed and on to Ways and Means. We refer to Ways and Means. Members, just one quick announcement before we adjourn. I wanted to let folks know we do not have a next meeting scheduled as of yet. We will have transportation meetings as scheduled as needed. We will continue to strive for a bipartisan agreement as possible. You know, as we move forward during this emergency, So stay tuned to your emails and your staff. We will when we schedule a meeting, it will be again most likely at our normal committee time, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 12:45. And so with that, I would like to wish for those who celebrate, a very happy Passover, very happy Easter. I hope that you'll have a chance to rest a little bit here during our Easter Passover break. And again, with much appreciation for all of you, this meeting is adjourned.